Hey everyone, I'm Deb.
And I'm Sarah.
And this is Cosmopolitics. Cosmopolitics is a podcast simultaneously uplifting and criticizing popular culture in the U District, Seattle, on our phones and beyond. Fundamentally, Cosmopolitics is about asking and answering the question of, why does culture matter?
Coffee Roasters, open in Pioneer Square and South Lake Union for takeout, and soon, indoor seating. Order coffee and more at elmcoffeeroasters.com.
Hi, welcome back to another episode of Cosmopolitics. This is our first time doing it, like, not on FaceTime, and we're in the studio at the Daily, and we're super excited to kind of bring this episode in the middle of the quarter, midterm weeks. This is our second time recording this for reasons. Today we're going to talk about a few things from the summer, from just like recent pop culture stuff, kind of like
late summer recap, I'd say.
We're going to do some, like, I guess detailed recaps, because it's not like we're going to hit on 10 things.
Yeah.
But like, we're going to talk about stuff. So we kind of want to talk about one of, I feel like it's not even that recent anymore, but I remember when we were starting this episode, we were like, oh my god, it's so recent, it's so cool.
Yeah.
But Shang-Chi, to get to the point, that was the new movie release that was about Shang-Chi. It was, like, notable because it was, like, the Asian Marvel movie.
Yeah, like, the first Asian-led Marvel movie, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, because, like, the only people there, the people, all the people in there were basically Asian.
There's that one white guy. There's always that one white guy, I feel like.
Every, like, diverse movie needs a token white man.
Because white people
really need to insert themselves everywhere for some reason.
Mm-hmm. I love that for us.
I love that.
But yeah, I mean, I think that movie was just notable because, as you said, just the first, like, Asian-led movie. And especially the fact that it focused, like, a lot on Chinese culture. And, I mean, I think that was kind of, from what I heard, it seems like Marvel really has wanted to tap into, like, kind of a Chinese audience for a really long time, but China apparently has, like, very stringent rules on the kinds of movies and the kinds of media that they allow, especially, like, the kinds of foreign media they allow. So the movie was definitely very pro-China, which that is what it is. But I think what was interesting about it was just, like, the way that it actually, like, leaned fully into Chinese culture, because that was the strength of it, honestly. Yeah.
I don't think it was pro-China in the way we talk about government anyway.
Yeah, it wasn't really
was
government
China
at all.
It was pro-China as in, like, it's just China, man. It's just another culture, another society, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like Marvel was very deliberately trying not to be, like, on their Oriental bullshit because, like, historically and presently, that's a lot of times what happens when you have Asian cultural movies or just, like, any ethnic culture, they often go really caricaturizing and, like, stereotyping in general. But
I mean, what did you think, like, on their, like, what did you think about that? Like, do you think that they did a good job on that, or?
I mean, I feel like they did a decent job.
Yeah.
I feel like at certain, obviously, I can't give, like, total judgment because, like, I'm literally not Chinese. But I think they made an effort to not be Oriental, but I feel like in certain ways they were being Oriental. I don't know, like, stereotyping.
Yeah, like, they definitely relied on a lot of, like, traditionally Chinese, like, aspects of Chinese culture that everyone kind of thinks of, which, I mean, that's, like, they're there for a reason. Like, for me, like, the dragon thing was really, like, I mean, I think it was, like, the visual effects of that were really cool, and it was, like, cool to see a dragon and everything, but it was just so random. Like, it didn't make any sense with the plot, and it was just like, oh, like that's a Chinese thing. At least that's how it felt to me as a white person. I was just like,
no, yeah.
I was even like, this is cool, but also, like, why is this here?
No, literally, it's like, I just really think Asian Americans need to lose their grip on, like, dragons as imagery. I mean, you don't need to put that in every tattoo and movie and book and shit.
I mean, they're freaking cool. They're dragons.
I love dragons, man.
But also, like, there's other things about Chinese and, like, other Asian culture. Like, it just doesn't have to be just dragons. I see what you're saying
on
that one.
Like, it was a point where they were trying to, like, not be offensive to the point that maybe they were accidentally being a little offensive.
Yeah.
You know?
That's kind of
that happens.
The sense that I got. They wanted to do it. They wanted to do it well so badly that, like, they also, I mean, had to make sure it was, like, commercially successful. Like, they had to put stuff in there, like, they totally had to do. So,
I mean, if you're going to talk about ethnic culture, like, stereotyping and Orientalism sells.
Because
you're catering to because a really white audience. Because it's palatable.
Like you know what you're going to get from that. You know, you're just going to get Orientalism.
Lovely. I did really like, I mean, okay, there are, like, issues I also had, but I like the storyline they had for the sister, Xia Ling.
Okay, yeah.
I loved her. She was hot and she was cool.
Yeah, she was sick.
She was
I think awesome. Her and Awkwafina should have, I don't know.
They should have kissed.
They should have done something gay, is my opinion.
I agree. I think I would have enjoyed this. I enjoy the movie, but I think I would have enjoyed it even more if they kissed.
Yeah. And also, like, she was so cool. And then, but, like, honestly, why, honestly, was the movie even focused on Shang-Chi at all? Like,
so true.
He was just this random. He was boring. He just, like, was this, chauffeur, whatever. He was a valet in San Francisco. And his sister, though, Shaoling, she was just this, like, fucking badass. Like, she made this, like, fighting ring. And,
in
like,
her words,
what was
she
it,
had
Macau?
An empire.
Yeah, she literally, like, why are we focusing on the brother?
Like,
well, I mean, like, I think we know why.
Know. It's
but
like, girl, like, looking at Shaoling.
They hate to see a girl boss winning.
Yeah, so true. It's like, when you think of the main character, quotes, main character, Shang-Chi. Wow, I'm not remembering
I know.
Her name now. I'm just like, girl, your storyline is so boring. You have daddy issues? So do I, man. Yeah. Get over it.
This isn't anything new, okay?
I know. I'm like, if you're going to make a superhero movie, give us something, like, exceptional.
Yeah, for real. I do think that the visual effects, though, I think those were on another level. Especially
because they
were, like, more magical. And I think, like, kind of in the past, Marvel's magic stuff has been, like, Loki and, like, Scarlet Witch, like, waving their hands around and some, like, magic dust comes out of their hands or whatever. But, like, this was cool in the sense that it was, like, they were manipulating water and they were manipulating, like, air and, like, all these different elements and stuff. And, I mean, the dragon, for whatever it was in terms of, like, the culture, I think, like, the visual effects of that dragon were stunning.
It was so cool. I guess that's, like, one good thing about, like, the advance of technology is, like, CGI starts to look, like, real and looks so cool.
Yeah.
Like, Marvel opinions aside, I think their production is getting really good.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, because they have so much fucking money now.
They're fucking rich as hell.
They can do whatever they want.
And it's like, if I just ignore the fact that they have so much money, I'm like, wow, this looks so cool.
I know. Honestly, at a certain point, you just have to be like, you know, I'm going to see an action movie, and that's all I'm that's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I'm here to see a superhero movie, and that's what it is.
Sometimes you just gotta live with the mantra, like, my individual buying of this ticket will literally not make a difference. It's okay. Go see the movie.
Exactly. But yeah, I mean, the plot was just, I mean, my issue with that too was just like kind of, I just feel like what you're saying, like, I think they were trying to work in so many aspects of Chinese culture that it just, the plot just suffered from it. It didn't make any sense.
Sometimes when you try to do a million things at once, it flops.
Yeah.
Like, focus on a few good things.
I feel like they didn't really have a clear sense of their story. Like, they didn't know really what they wanted to say with it. Because I think they were kind of talking about family, and they're sort of making points about, like, the importance of family in Chinese culture. But, like, I don't know. They didn't really hammer down on that, especially because the dad was kind of shitty, too, at times. So it just, like, didn't really... The message wasn't clear or strong.
It was interesting because, like, before I saw the Shang-Chi movie, I never watched a trailer because I don't like watching trailers because I feel like trailers spoil everything for me.
Bold take, but okay.
I was told that the villain, quote, villain would be played by Tony Leung, who I love.
Mm-hmm.
But I was, like, watching it. And I'm like, what's interesting about Shang-Chi is, like, the dad was shitty, but I don't think he was necessarily, like, a villain.
No.
Like, there was not really, and I don't, not saying that movies need a clear villain, but I think that's, like, interesting the way this deviated as opposed to a lot of other Marvel movies. Like, you have a big bad.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a good point, too. Like, kind of nuance of it, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because, I mean, they couldn't, like, I feel like, honestly, okay, that was probably good on their part to not make the enemy, like, something very concrete, because I think that would have fallen very easily into, like, very racist tropes very quickly.
That would get racist real quick.
Yeah. And it's interesting how, like, I mean, too, the dad was, it was a very, like, in the sense, like, I mean, the storyline as a whole, I think, wasn't super relatable, but I think the moments, like, there were chunks of it that were really well done. Like, I think especially the dad whole thing of, like, I don't even remember the plot now, but, like, the mom was taken, or he thought she was taken, like, and it's, like, dad versus son. Like, that was a really interesting thing for Marvel to do, I agree.
Mm-hmm. I also really like how all the people that the guy dad was slaughtering were white people.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, I think that Marvel definitely realized, like, for what they were doing, Like, I mean, they know enough to be like, okay, we can't just, like, have a bunch of just, like, Asian people just killing each other. Like, that's just not... I think they realized that that was also, like, not a good way to use this movie.
Maybe not in 2021.
No.
So they're like, oh, shit, we can't offend people that much.
Oh, we can't be outwardly racist.
Yeah, we just gotta put it every 5 minutes. Yeah. Really slowly and subtly, but yep. Not subtly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think segueing from Shang-Chi, I think an example of something that is very positive representation and something that I think hit the nail on the head fully mm-hmm. is Lil Nas X's album Montero, exactly, which if you exactly. have not listened to it, literally what are you doing? And also, have you lived under a rock for the past 2 months? I know, right?
What the hell are you doing?
Like, I've actually listened to it, like, I got one of those, like, Spotify notifications. It was like, congrats, you're one of Lil Nas X's, like, too. Top 100%, like, top 1% listeners. And I was like, ah, damn it.
As we should.
I know. No. I mean, they're just, like, lyrically, they're very smart, and also just, like, just the songs are just fucking bops. Like,
also, like, bomb-ass collaborations. Mm-hmm. Hello, Elton John, Megan Thee Stallion, Doja Cat.
Miley
Hello.
Cyrus. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, well, how can you forget that white boy, Jack Harlow?
Jack Harlow! Okay, I will say his verse is fucking...
His verse is... I don't care I about love him, his verse. But his verse is good.
His verse is so
his
good.
His verse is just, like, rhythmically, I feel like... I think, in general, like, the song is good. Mm-hmm. But it's, like, I thought it just, like, that was such nice beats and nice lyrics to listen to.
Yeah. Like, and also, it's just very relatable, too. I think a lot of what... Like, Lil Nas X, he's, like, literally our age. He's, like, 1 month older than me, which trips me up. I know.
He was, like, 25 or something.
No, I know. He's literally... He's, like, 21.
That's crazy.
But it's just, like... I don't know. I just feel like I relate to him a lot, just in a lot of different ways. But also, like... Just hearing him kind of be like, yeah, like, everyone was, like, not taking me seriously. Like, everyone just, he's just, I feel like the whole album is how people shat on him and how he's, like, risen from that and, like, kind of coming back. And it just was really, like, powerful to see, like, a gay black man Absolutely. Being like, fuck you, like, I know I'm the shit. And it just...
I just really like awesome him being unapologetic and, mm-hmm. like, people being really positive about it. Obviously, there's going to be people shitting on it. There are a lot of people shitting on it, but I like to see the more, like, overwhelming support because he's really mm-hmm. unapologetic. Like, there's that song. I was literally, like, looking up which Montero songs I downloaded. Mm-hmm. There's, like, Dead Right Now, which is, like, Dead really, right really good. Good.
Yeah.
Literally, like, about his parents. And,
yeah.
Like,
and I think Tales from Dominica is about his mom.
Yeah. Know? And it's, like, I think that's... a really common tale of, like, oh, you've made it now, and now these people who, like, shit on what you were doing mm-hmm. or your identities, they're like, ooh, we love you, and yeah. it's like, you don't have to accept them just yeah. because someone apologizes, or not even, like, apologize, but it's, like, is showing you support.
Yeah, like, now that he's famous, everyone wants his money and wants to be on it, and he's like, fuck you guys, which, like, go off, like,
it's
good
a whole
him.
Thing about, like, I think about parents, like, being shitty because of your identities, but also just, like, this isn't about apologizing anyway, but I think if you look at it in that angle, like, you don't have to accept certain things, or you mm-hmm. don't have to accept family for who they are.
Yeah.
They should have accepted him for who he was,
yeah.
but...
yeah.
Yeah. Because I think, like, it's super, like, important, because I feel like a lot of people are more outspoken about, like, things they struggle with and mm-hmm. the ways they suffer, and especially in regard to family. I feel like most people I know have at least a little bit of family issues, and it's like, everyone's like, oh, no, but they're your family, and it's yeah. like, bitch, no, you don't have to, like, accept that.
If someone's absolutely shitty to you, you don't have to keep them in your life,
exactly,
no matter who they are.
Exactly. Like, regardless of whether they're your blood family or not, you can find other people, and people
found family,
do.
Bitch.
Found family. My favorite trope.
Such a good trope, honestly. But yeah, I just think, like, especially, like I was saying, lyrically, listening to Lil Nas X, like, one of my favorite lyrics, I don't know, I can't remember which song this is, but it's something like, he's singing about, like, this guy that he's a crush on or something, and he's like, I wonder if he got the G or the B, let me find out and see, he's coming over to me. And I was like, because it took me, I was like, what the fuck is he saying? And I was like, oh.
That's good, actually.
It's just little things like that that you're like, oh, like, he's just working it in. And also, he says, like, I don't fuck bitches, I'm queer or something in Industry Baby, I think.
Yeah.
It's just little things like that. Like, I mean, I just like the little gay ones. But just, like, kind of all of his little, like, asides kind of in the commentary that, you know, it just feels very genuine. And, like, you know this man is not being fake.
It's really cool because it's, like, a really good mix of being genuine but also, like, very pop star, you mm-hmm. know, like...
I mean, he's just so millennial. Like, he, or not even, just Gen Z. Like,
yeah,
he
is
Gen Z, and he understands our humor and, like, kind of the way that just Gen Z thinks about things in a way that I feel like even, like, 23, 24-year-olds just, like, don't fully get.
Yeah, if I had to have someone rep Gen Z, I'm cool with this.
Yeah, I'm okay cool with him being, like, our unofficial ambassador. Like, that's fine.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, literally hits, mm-hmm. hits, hits. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm looking at, like, I just looked up Montero on my, like, playlist, and mm-hmm. there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different Montero Call Me By Your Name. One of them's the original, one of them's his, like, acapella version. There's something else, the extended one. There's the instrumental, and then mm-hmm. I just have a cover. I didn't even realize I had so much of that song.
I mean, that's such a good song.
It is.
But it's also, really, like, good. The music videos, too.
My God, yeah.
Especially the Montero music video and the Industry Baby music video, which, yeah. Are those the only? Those are the only ones I've seen, at least. I don't know if he has any other ones.
Not
I think
sure.
Those might be the only two.
Yeah.
But
I haven't watched any other ones, if there are.
Yeah. But even just, like, they're so good for, like, obviously, like, just aesthetically, they're interesting, they're good videos, like, at surface value. But then, like, going deeper, too, like, they're pretty heavy also, in a way. Like, on a very, it's just, explaining him, I feel like, is so difficult because he talks about, like, he's subtle and also not at the same time. And I think that's, like, part of what makes him so interesting is how he's obvious about things, but also doesn't shove them in your face, I feel like.
It's like an interesting balance of things you think you couldn't balance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. It's just like the whole, like, the thing of going down the pole and landing, and, like, the lap dance, the devil, the way that that made conservatives mad, like, it just made him even, like, more popular. Like,
it made conservatives mad, but it was iconic for a lot of us.
Yeah. Like we all saw that and we're like, oh my God, like, him giving a lap dance to the devil, like, that's fucking, like, that's awesome.
Yeah,
like, that's hilarious.
Go off, dude.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, like, Industry Baby, how that was just, it, like, took place in a prison.
Yep.
That was a little bit disconnected to me because Industry Baby is basically about how everyone treated him like shit until he finally, like, made it, and everyone's like, oh, you can't, like, do this, like, Old Town Road is, like, a one-hit wonder, and he's like, no, I'm not a one-hit wonder.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, then it's about kind of prison, and it's making, like, commentary on, like, black men in prison and stuff, so that didn't fully connect to me, but I like how he brought that up, and he just, like, is very good at taking social issues and working them into his songs in a way that, like, just makes them even better.
That's Gen Z content creation for you.
Yeah, when honestly.
You mix in just, like, lyrical talent as well.
Yeah.
You know? I think that's a great combo.
And his voice is just so nice.
I like listening to him.
Like, he's such a good time. Voice. Yeah.
It's a good time. I really like listening to Lost in the Citadel. It's just...
That's my favorite
a good
one.
Vibe. Just, that's... like, a really good vibe.
Yes.
Like, obviously the, like, lyrics are good, but I just, like, listening to the music, it's just calming to me.
Yeah. That's a very calming song, I feel like. Yeah.
It's, like, more of, like, the low-key kind of song on the album.
And I like, there's a range. That's what I like about it, too, is you have Industry Baby, and you have Dead Right Now, which are kind of, like, on the more, not aggressive, but I guess, like, righteous, if almost, end of it. And then you have kind of, like, Lost in the Citadel, and then, like, what was it, Life After Salem, too.
Yeah.
And those are kind of more of, like, the, like, reflective, like, slow songs.
I love
it,
both,
like,
of those,
He really goes across the whole, like, range of that, and I think it's really impressive.
Totes.
Yeah.
Open since 2015, Elm Coffee Roasters is devoted to high-quality coffee that's easy to brew at home and a joy to drink. At our roastery and cafe in Pioneer Square, Seattle, Elm obsessively roasts small batches of coffee that they source with a focus on sustainable practices that lift up the whole supply chain and protect the future of the coffee plant.
Elm's goal is to make a truly exceptional cup of coffee and an experience you look forward to every day. Cafes in Pioneer Square and South Lake Union open now for takeout and soon dine-in service. Please use code PODCAST at elmcoffeeroasters.com for 15% off your next coffee order. All right. Now I think we wanted to launch into a truly contentious topic. but I think that we would be amiss if we did not discuss the Met Ball.
Yeah. Oh my God. This feels forever ago.
I know. This was so long ago.
It was literally in September, which technically, it was September, right? It was September.
I think so.
Which was literally last month.
Yeah.
I feel like we can't not talk about it because it technically happened.
There's just a lot of things to talk about from there.
There's so many things. I'm trying to remember, like, everything that happened.
For one, like, the theme. Like, what was the actual official theme? It was, like, American dreams or something like American invention. It was
American something.
American something.
Wait, was it Americana?
Oh, yeah. It was Americana. And I mean, okay, just putting aside the weighted, like, topic of America, like, just as, like, American aesthetics, like, mm-hmm. American, well, I guess that is kind of very tied into the whole issue, but American aesthetics are very clear. Like, you know what America, I mean, they're, like, baseball, apple pie, like, that kind of stuff. Like, you know all those things. And no one did the theme. Like, why is there a themed gala if no one's gonna fucking do the theme? That just pisses me off every time. I just liked the Catholic one because that was the best theme.
I feel like the theme, terrible theme, has got to be on purpose because I like to think that fucking, like, Anna Wintour isn't, like, that dumb, you know?
Yeah.
And, like,
I hope.
But you hope. But, like, that theme was messy. Like, if you just looked at all the outfits people were wearing and just, mm-hmm. like, take a look at the coverage of the Met Gala, you're like, what the fuck is going on? Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's no cohesiveness.
Yeah.
Other than, like, mess.
Yeah. The one look that I think did actually, that I was like, okay, that was pretty, actually, there's two looks that I think were pretty good. One of them was Dan Levy.
Oh, yeah.
And he had this, like, shirt about, like, AIDS or something.
It was
like,
the art.
About, yes. It was the art from an AIDS-positive artist who, like, was an activist or something.
Totes, yeah.
So I thought that was pretty good. And then also, I want to say Nikki Tutorials, I think? I don't know. I don't watch YouTube, and I don't watch beauty stuff at all.
Marsha P. Johnson.
Yeah. And that was really cool to see a trans woman dressed up as Martha P. Johnson.
Absolutely.
And I thought, like, in the way that, I think that also it was a very good derivation of kind of, like, those iconic images that you see of Martha P. Johnson.
Yeah.
And, like, the flower crown and stuff. So absolutely. I thought those were good.
I feel like it was really cool because it's, like, I guess when you're thinking about the Americana theme, it's, like, you're pulling aspects of American culture that are, like, important, mm-hmm. but not necessarily focused on because they are very much related to, like, marginalized communities and stuff. And when we think about America, we think about red, white, and blue. We think about Eagles. We think about Thanksgiving and shit,
mm-hmm.
which are often things that we celebrate because of, like, oppression and colonization and stuff. That's what was come out of it, and that's what reigns superior. But then mm-hmm. there's also so much else that's going on.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that's, like, a good use of the theme, even if everything else was a mess.
Mm-hmm.
And what's his face? Elliot Page.
Yes.
So, because, like, what did he wear? He wore the suit.
He's wearing a black tux and the green carnation, which is, like, that was the Oliver Wilde thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Of, like, gay men or queer men, signaling that, like, they're gay.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I saw some tweet. This was not my original commentary, but someone was like, Elliot Page is allowed to wear a plain black tux. Like, he's the only one who's allowed to.
He's allowed.
He's got to have his first time. But then next Met Gala, he needs to have an interesting outfit.
Yeah, next year you got to get your shit together.
Yeah, we need him to get his shit together after that.
Will not withhold from critique.
Yes, exactly. Next year. He gets a bye. He gets a pass.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, so I guess those are some of the good looks that we liked. I think one of the ones that we did not like was the Peg the Patriarchy top.
Oh, my goodness.
Which was worn by
Cara
Delevingne.
That had a few different implications and interpretations.
Yeah, which, like, I'll say my initial, like, I was looking through all the pictures and I was like, I saw her wearing that and I was like, okay, like, haha, whatever, like, sure.
Right?
And I think that was a lot of people's just initial reaction, or at least a lot of, like, you know, people, like, Gen Z were kind of like, oh, haha, like, that's funny, whatever. And then I saw, like, someone, like, actually had taken a second to think critically about it and, like, that's actually kind of fucked up. Like,
especially because, like, it's like when you say Peg the Patriarchy, you're saying it as some sort of, like, female power move. And it's like, first thought, after, like, reflecting, obviously my first initial thought was the same as you.
Yeah.
And I think that was a lot of people, which is another thing to talk about later.
Yeah.
In, like,
hive
it's
mind.
A separate
thing.
But, well, it's not really a separate thing, but for today, it's a separate thing. because it's like, okay, my second thought then is, like, shit, are you talking about rape?
Yeah.
Like, you're gonna non-consensual pegging.
Yeah.
You know?
It's either says one of two things. Either that patriarchy should be rewarded with pleasure.
Uh-huh. And should be,
there's that. As pegging is, like, a sexual act, like, it isn't inherently anything other than a sexual act. So, like, either the patriarchy deserves to be, I don't know,
given even more pleasure.
Given pleasure, or the patriarchy deserves to be raped. Which, that, like, that's just so tricky.
Yeah, it's just the whole thing of, like, yay, more patriarchy, or, like...
Yeah, and then just, especially the fact that, like, pegging is, like, a gay thing.
Yeah, it's, like, a lesbian thing.
Yeah.
So there's that. I'm just like, there's so many layers to this.
There's a lot of layers to that.
That's the thing about like white feminism and like white feminists. They do a lot of shit without thinking about like other people.
Or I mean, just that's why there's been so many fucking waves of feminism. Is because the first one, white people were like, white women were just like, actually fuck black women. Just let us vote. I know. And that was how they, that was literally how white women got the vote, was they were like, actually, like, black women don't deserve it, but we as white women do. No, like, fuck
that
you.
That was literally their pitch to people, like, you should give us the right to vote, because you don't want those dirty black people to.
Yeah.
What the fuck, man?
Which, like, not that that has exact, like, ties to what we were talking about in the sense of pegging the patriarchy, but just, like, I don't know. It's just the critical thinking skills of white people are just at a minimum.
But I think it is important. It's an important detail because it's just another example of, like, white women on their shit again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, white women leading movements that really just further disenfranchise people.
Literally.
Yeah. It's just...
White people shit. Literally. Oh, my gosh.
I mean, that top was just a lot. But I think also... Aside from that one, I think we also had a lot to say about AOC's dress as well. Oh my
god, girly, what are you doing? Tax the rich.
I saw some tweet that was just like, the dress is performative. Criticizing the dress is performative. Criticizing people criticizing
everything
the dress.
Is performative.
It's all performative. But like, I think that raises a lot of interesting questions about like politics as a whole. Like,
politics is performative.
Politics
in America.
Is professional performance.
You perform for a living. You sit up there.
And what's worse is you're not even an actor. Like, actors know that they are doing fake shit. Politicians think that they're helping people.
Some of them do.
Some of them do.
Some of them. Some of them are fully aware of what's happening.
Yeah, very true. I'm
talking about you old fucking wrinkly people in D.C.
That's a separate issue, but yeah.
No, okay, yeah, it's performative. And I also think that there's something to be said about it saying tax the rich, because that kind of implies that, oh, rich people can exist. They are moral people.
Yeah.
Which is not really a thing. I don't think so.
Yeah.
You know? Because I think that's the whole, like, I think reformist and very, like, liberal aspect of her politics is, like, well, I don't think that dress necessarily matches her politics totally, but I also don't think her politics are super left as a lot of people think they are.
Yeah. It's just the whole thing with the Iron Dome vote, too.
Like, that's oh my god, so many things with this woman.
That's, like, just what pissed me off, too, is, like, that's what felt so fucking performative, is, like, crying while you're voting for something, like... Just fucking vote the other way.
Give me a break. Literally, it's sad to see. She's getting so entrenched in the world of American politics that this is sellout behavior, literally.
Yeah.
Like, the reason why she voted president is because she's afraid that voting, like, nay would, like, affect her Senate run. Like, that's selling out.
Yeah.
That's literally selling out. What the hell?
And, like, she has enough, like, political power to stay in the House for a lot. Like, I don't think she's going anywhere in the House.
There's literally a quote from her before she got office about, like, yeah, it doesn't matter how many terms you have. You can do a lot in 2 years. So look at her now. Like,
really, what are you
this
doing?
This did not age well.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing.
Like, I want to like her, but...
I would love to like her.
Yeah.
That I want nothing less than to actually like an American politician.
Yeah.
But the truth of the matter is, in American politics...
Yeah.
You can't be a good actor.
No. You just, like, you can't change it from inside. And I think that's what...
That's not a thing.
I think that's the hope a lot of people had for her. And for Bernie as well. Is, like, changing it from the inside and, like trying to do the best that you can with what you have. But it's just, like... I mean, you're right. She's just selling out.
Yeah. It's like that Audre Lorde quote that I don't remember the full thing of, about how, like, the master's tool will not dismantle, like... house or system or whatever.
Yeah.
That's not the perfect quote, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I feel your,
like,
your point there.
It's so true. I feel like a lot of people reference it because it is so true.
Yeah.
And you can see it historically and just, like, presently.
Yeah.
Like, sure, there have been, like, slight reformative changes, but a lot of people are still suffering and stuff. And, like,
yeah. And there's a reason why people are still suffering is because it makes money for people to suffer. And they're not going to change it if it's making them money.
Again, we're back to capitalism.
Yeah. And I think, too, like, another part of the dress, like, touching on the capitalism part of it, is, like, tax the rich. She needs to eat the rich, which tax the rich is the more palatable version of, like, the original slogan, which is eat the rich. So, like, that's kind of an interesting change there. And also, like, just slogans like that, like, anti-capitalist slogans as a whole are inherently... I didn't come up with this either. I saw this in a tweet, too. But I thought that was really interesting that, like... Anti-capitalist slogans are inherently capitalist because they're commodifying anti-capitalism and they're making it able to work within a capitalist system.
Oh, totally.
Like you can just say eat the rich and it's like, yeah, ha, whatever, eat the rich. Like, you understand the sentiment that conveys, but that doesn't, it doesn't require you to do anything. You can just say that.
No, absolutely. You see that happening right now, like with, you know, like communist and socialist thinkers of the past and present say that your like pro people, pro working class slogans and like movements will be co-opted by capitalists and the bourgeoisie. Like you see that happening with celebrities like Jamila Jamil and Bo Burnham, who are supposedly like really like activist celebrities, really left and stuff. But you see them commodifying like anti-capitalist thought for their own commodification, and that's a part of the cycle. Like anything that's like pro people are going to be distorted and like used quotation marks by like these rich people, by the people in power, and that'll slow down any actual movement because they're like, oh, things are getting better, but they're not.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's a whole ass thing.
Yeah, like, I think, I mean, that's just the issue with, I think, a lot of the social change that's happened in the pandemic is like people, I think a lot of people are waking up to a lot of the shit, like a lot of privileged people, I should say, are waking up to a lot of the injustice that's happened that they have not previously been exposed to. And I think it's very overwhelming for people. And so it's easy to just be like, oh, yeah, like, it's all fucked up. Like okay, eat the rich. Yeah, like, that's my part. Like, whatever. Yeah, I hate rich people too. But it's like, if you're not, like, what are you doing with that? Like, exactly. How are you actually doing something about it?
No, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Holy crap. It's just, what the hell?
It's just a lot. This summer, I think there was a lot of things that happened.
This summer was so long. And I know we go to UW and our summer is hella long, but it just felt long still.
Yeah.
There's just so much that happened.
There's just so much happening, like, socially, politically, in our own daily lives, too. Mm-hmm. Like, we're still in the middle of a fucking, like, we're both wearing our masks right now. We're in the middle of a fucking pandemic.
Like, I can't believe people have the nerve to call it post-pandemic right now. I'm like,
I know. It's like, we're not through this shit yet, bro. Just because we're vaccinated.
Honestly, it's really weird to me that we're actually in person right now.
I know.
Because the state of our nation, just saying, is not great.
But, like, that's what's interesting, too. Especially, I think, like, a lot of people have kind of done some research on the 1918 pandemic to kind of, like, see back. Mm-hmm. And the parallels are just, like, you would think that in 100 years a lot has changed. But, honestly, like, the parallels are so similar. Like, there's people with their, like, little, like, ancient little vax cards and stuff. I saw pictures of, like, the 1919 vax cards.
I saw, like, the yellow fever stuff, like, the vaccine passports and everything. Yeah,
and even, like, the fact that that pandemic also, like, it lasted, like, technically it lasted, like, a year and a half, kind of what this is doing. Like, and then
that's where we're at.
And then at that point, people were like, we just have to get back to, like, we can't keep, like, at some point, life does have to move on, and I do understand that, but, like, it's not, we can't just be like, it's over yet. Like, there's still going to be many years where we experience the fallout of this.
I mean, again, profit incentives. Yeah. You know, work, 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 productivity.
Yeah.
We're not creating output, so thus we're failing.
Yeah.
That's their measurement of success.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just also really nice to see, especially I noticed a lot of this over the summer, a lot of it feels like labor movements are kind of happening right now.
Oh,
and
agree.
Especially with the labor shortage. And there was a walkout at Netflix yesterday.
Yeah.
Or Wednesday.
Yeah.
Which was really interesting. And there was also, like, a strike at Kellogg, cereal and stuff.
Yeah. And then those,
a lot of snack food brands have had a lot of walkouts.
Because of Nestle
and Kellogg, I think both
Nestle
are pretty.
Nestle and Kellogg are a big one. And then there's,
don't buy Nestle and Kellogg.
So true. Don't cross the picket
or
line.
Or Frito-Lay also. They were so fucking shitty. And I love Cheetos, too. I was so upset about that.
Big chip companies. Don't be a scab.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and then there's, like, the Hollywood crew workers. They, this is even more of a thing because of, like, the recent, literally today, the news about Alec Baldwin shooting a fucking director of film or photography and also
cinematography.
And, someone else. Was it the director or something?
The director was injured.
The director got injured but is alive. But, like, holy fuck.
How do you, like, I kind of want to know what's going on in Alec Baldwin's head right now, because he must be like, what the fuck? Like, he killed someone.
Yeah, that movie also is just, like, I was reading more about it, and I still don't have the details, so I can't really confirm it. But it's, like, lots of, there have been grievances earlier on this
set
already.
So this is just a trash fire movie.
Labor-wise. low budget, low tier stuff. Like, you got Alec Baldwin attached to it, but that's about it.
Yeah.
So that's the whole thing.
Yeah.
It all just ties together. Wow, look at that. I can't believe this is a pop culture podcast.
It's all just the more that I learn about, I want to say society, but just like, I feel like especially like, I've been one of those people who kind of like woke up to like actual shit in the world for the pandemic. And the more that I feel like I learn about like injustice and how like fucking shitty everything is, the more it's like, wow, literally everything's connected.
Everything sucks. That's the moral of the story today for this episode.
And on that note.
Stream Montero. Yeah. All right. See y'all next week or the week after.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Cosmopolitics. Catch us next time for more hot takes on pop culture.